You're listening to Miscarriage Stories with Arden Cartrett. Before we get into today's episode, I wanted to jump on and make this super quick, but I wanted to let you know that with the holidays coming up, Cassia and I, who is a doula on my team, by the way, we have put together this incredible webinar for you. It's called Grieving Through the Holidays. It's a 17-minute webinar that you can get in video format, audio format, and you have access to a 20-page guidebook that serves as a workbook, but also has the transcript for the webinar and some extra information. It covers things like coping during the holiday season, setting goals, scripts for talking to people about miscarriage or answering their nosy questions, journal prompts, a deep dive into triggers, and so much more. You can get this for $15. It includes the audio, the video, and the guidebook. And you can access this or learn more if you'd like to by visiting the link in today's show notes. Okay, let's get into the episode. Haley, welcome to the Miscarriage Doula Podcast. I don't think excited that you're sharing your story is the right word, but I'm happy that you're here and able to share your story and willing. I'm going to let you take it away, and I'd love for you to introduce yourself and then start your story wherever you feel like it starts.
All right. Well, thanks so much for having me. It's a hard topic to be talking about, but as I've gone through my journey, I've just noticed, you know, I almost find it like helpful and therapeutic to be sharing my story. And I think people get nervous or shy, or they don't really know how to approach the subject of asking me what this experience has been like. And so, you know, finding these outlets where you can just be open and share what this experience has been like is really helpful. So thanks for having me on today. I'm joining from Missoula, Montana. I've been living here for about a year and a half. So ironically, a lot of my journey kind of started with the move to Montana. And that kind of surfaces a couple points throughout my story of kind of how that's been relevant. But I've been pregnant 4 times and I have had 0 live births. And I share that because that's often what you see when you're at the doctor's office and getting an ultrasound and it's staring you in the face. You see 4 pregnancies, no births. And, you know, it feels kind of like a bad joke. And it's shocking even for me to say that out loud and really, it's just wild to me that I've gone through this 4 times. But my story actually starts back in 2019, before my partner and I were married, before we were even trying to start a family. I still had an IUD in place at the time when I found myself one night feeling some really awful cramping and bleeding. And I was like, what is going on? Pregnancy was not even in my mind at all. And I actually called the number on the emergency nurse line or something on my insurance card. And they weren't really that worried at all. And I think I even said like, this can be an ectopic pregnancy or something. And she was like, oh no, you have the Paragard. Like you wouldn't be pregnant. And they scheduled me the next morning for an appointment with an OB. I hadn't really established care anywhere at that point. So it was just kind of a random OB that I could get in with, at Kaiser. This was when I was living in San Francisco. And showed up and we're, you know, doing the standard intake, you know, they had me pee in a cup, took my blood pressure. I'm just starting to chat with the OB and the medical assistant pops her head in the room and is like, we have a positive pregnancy test. And I was like, oh my gosh, you have to work on your bedside manner, but like pretty shocking to hear when I wasn't, you know, planning for that or expecting that at all. But you know, as my mind is just like wrapping my head around that, also, you know, I'm wrapping my head around, well, like I'm bleeding a lot. So this obviously isn't a good thing. And so the OB, did an ultrasound right away and, you know, she had seen what she thought was some like small pools of blood in my uterus, kind of signaling that I had already miscarried the majority of, the pregnancy tissue, which, you know, again, it was just so many mixed emotions. I wasn't wanting to be pregnant at the time, you know? So it was just kind of like relief. There was a lot of stuff coming up for me in that moment. But yeah, she was like almost certain that I had miscarried. And, you know, we did some follow-up HCG levels just to make sure that it was all dropping. And unfortunately, my levels were not dropping. They weren't climbing rapidly, but they weren't dropping. And so then she suggested that we do a manual vacuum aspiration, or DNC. I think they're very similar. And maybe thought that there was just some tissue that had still remained in my uterus. So I did that, not a very fun procedure, but my best friend came along with me and made it through that. And then my levels still weren't dropping. And so she wanted to give me methotrexate, which is a chemotherapy drug that basically targets any foreign cells growing in your body. So it was a way, if I, you know, was experiencing an ectopic pregnancy, that they could take care of that without needing to do surgery or anything like that. This was all very complicated because my father was incredibly sick at the time and in the hospital up in Washington. And so she was wanting to, you know, administer this drug to me. I mean, it's just a pill, easy to take, but she wanted me to do it very quickly, but she also wanted to monitor me and she didn't want me flying because she was worried about rupture of the fallopian tube. And so it was just very, very stressful. I ended up saying, like, I don't think that's going to happen. Actually, in retrospect, I'm proud of myself for just kind of like listening to my body and being like, no, this is fine. I need to go see my dad. And so I took the methotrexate and got immediately on an airplane. It was fine. You know, I didn't experience any bleeding or anything. So it's still a little unclear. Part of me in my mind wonders, did I miscarry that time from the beginning? you know, like, and my levels just weren't dropping as fast. I don't know. It was very strange. When I tell this story to other OBs, they're all pretty shocked that they didn't see anything in my fallopian tubes. That OB had told me that they're just not able to get a good view of fallopian tubes via ultrasound. I don't know. So anyway, mystery. But that was pregnancy number one. Ironically, through that process, like, there were a few times with different ultrasounds that they had checked my ovaries and they had seen a lot of mature follicles. And, you know, with getting pregnant with the IUD, everyone just kept saying, well, the good news in all this is you definitely can get pregnant, you know, which, gosh, people just love to say that to me, which more and more is not really feeling that reassuring. But fast forward, we moved to Montana. And so this is in 2021. One of the first things we did when we moved here was start looking around at different places to get care. I think I was nervous, having always lived in large cities and having so many options of what was going to be available to me here. And I'd been able to attend and support my friend through a birth at a birth center in San Francisco and just loved that experience and was really wanting that for myself. So one of the first things I did was reach out to the birth center here in Missoula. And they had shared, you know, that even before I'm pregnant, I'm welcome to come in for a preconception appointment, which I thought was so awesome. I didn't even realize people did that. And what it really turned into was just like a long intake of my random medical history, but not a lot of great information shared with me about the things I could do to really support my body in having a healthy pregnancy, which, as I've learned so much, and this will come up a few times in my story, I'm like, why didn't they tell me this at that appointment? I don't know if it would have made a difference, but I feel like I'm a little behind the game now when I could have learned some of that information earlier on. But then that August, we decided we wanted to start trying to get pregnant. And, you know, I'm old, I'm in my upper 30s. And so I was like, this could really take a while, you know? So as my husband's like, oh, are we ready yet? I'm like, this could take a long time, you know? But we got pregnant very quickly, which surprised us both. And, you know, we were very excited. And I have to say, I was really not that nervous. I think I was not thinking about my ectopic pregnancy really at all until medical professionals would bring it up. the idea of loss, like, didn't really come across my mind, even though it's quite common. But I mean, in many ways, that's good. I was feeling really positive about the pregnancy. We went in to the birth center for our first appointment. They wanted to see me a little bit earlier on just because of the history of ectopic pregnancy. I went in at 7.5 weeks. It was a funny, quirky experience. Like, they're all like very nice people. Oftentimes the ultrasound machines that they use in birth centers are not the most like up to date. And so she's doing the ultrasound and she actually saw the fetus right away. Thank God, because I would have been so nervous had this gone in the reverse order, but she saw it right away. It was looking good. Heard a heartbeat right away, but then she lost it on the view on the ultrasound machine. And this is a transvaginal ultrasound. It was early on. And I mean, she is fishing around in there for like, no joke, 10 minutes until she finds it again. And she's like, I mean, we did see it. I saw it. It was in your uterus. I did see it. But couldn't find it again. I learned later on from an OB that I have an inverted uterus. And so it can be hard to see the uterus if you're not a very well-trained sonographer. So I think like that would have been actually more comforting to hear, because instead it just kind of made me question the skill set of this midwife. And I was not nervous. And then I had gotten really nervous, and then she eventually found it again and everything was fine. And so it was just like this kind of quirky, funny experience. But that first appointment went well. I will say that after that, I started wondering like if I wanted to keep my care there, started talking, like looking around at a few other places. I still really wanted to work with a midwife. And there are very few midwives here in Missoula. But my husband didn't at all want to go down the route of home birth. I don't think I did either. And now I know that that just wouldn't really be an option for me, but, so we were limited, but I did find a brand new midwifery group out of the hospital here, that was paired up, with a high risk OB kind of overseeing the office. But then there was like a separate kind of midwifery part of the practice. So I was like, oh, well, maybe that'll be a good fit. So I reached out and I was chatting with the midwives and, had shared that, you know, I wanted to meet with them and thinking about transferring my care. This was about 2 weeks after that appointment at the birth center. And ironically, it was that exact same day I had reached out to those midwives that I started spotting a little bit. And so I, you know, was already talking to the new midwife. And so I was just like, and also I'm starting to spot. And she's like, oh yeah, that can be like really normal, you know, kind of don't worry about it. Which I know is true, but given my experience now, every time I spot, it has led to a loss. But I was trying to believe that that could be true. And she was like, well, call us back tomorrow. If it hasn't stopped, we can get you in here for another ultrasound. And so as that day progressed, the bleeding was getting more and more, but it really didn't start getting intense until like the middle of the night. And so there, you know, I could have gone into the emergency room, but I didn't feel like it was that severe, but I wasn't really in touch with the midwives or anything at that point. And gosh, that was a lonely night. I think I probably should have like woken up my husband and been like, sit here awake with me, but I felt bad and felt like I wanted him to sleep. And so I was just like going back and forth to the bathroom and just bleeding more and more and more. So it was pretty clear what was happening at that point. So first thing in the morning, I told my husband that, you know, we were losing the pregnancy. I called the midwives to schedule an appointment. They could get me in at like 8:30 or something like that. But I mean, I was cramping so much by that point. You know, they talk about it really being like labor, and that one, I definitely experienced that. I remember being on all fours on the couch at one point, just like moving my hips, moving my body around. Clearly my body was like trying to pass something. And this was all before we could even get out the door to the appointment. I remember having my husband fill out my intake paperwork. I hadn't established care at this place. It was just like really bad timing. And then at one point I was going upstairs, we were about to walk out the door, and I could just tell walking up the stairs, I was like, oh, I definitely feel something between my legs. And got upstairs and called my husband, and he came up, and I was holding in my hands the sack with the little fetus inside. And, you know, I think this was like an interesting transition point for me. I was very distraught. I was so upset. And I think it was this interesting moment of like, almost like my science brain kicking in a little bit, where, you know, it was very clear and definitive what was happening. And I think I was also very much seeing, you know, while this little cluster of cells was like working to grow into my baby, it wasn't yet my baby. And I think it was kind of this interesting distinction for me. I remember being able to like kind of calm and ground myself actually while I was holding it. I also knew I had previously for a job I had in San Francisco, I had taken a perinatal loss training course. And, you know, I remembered in that moment little bits about the importance of like honoring your loss and ceremony and different things. So it was like this weird moment of like so much happening, needing to get out the door, but also feeling like I need to like save this because I might want to do something with this. And so I tell my husband, like, go get something for this. We need to put it in the freezer. He comes upstairs with like a Talenti ice cream container. We had this, like, I know I'm laughing. It's like so dark, but sometimes like all you can do is laugh. We had a moment of like laughing over that only like a few months before. We had actually put some of my dad's ashes in a Talenti container as we were scattering them at the mountain. So it was like this weird kind of odd connection. And so anyway, we put it in the Talenti container in our freezer to figure out something to do with later. And we had to leave and go into the, see the midwives and had an ultrasound. And, it was very clear that, you know, everything had passed at that point. I wasn't even like cramping nearly as much or bleeding as much by that point. And I'm meeting with the midwife, and she's being very sweet and very supportive. And it's just like, you know, this, I can tell that your body like went through this process naturally. And, you know, I'm not like concerned about, needing to do anything else. And, she's just talking to me in this very soothing voice. And meanwhile, there's like this rapid knocking at the door, and this man barges into the room. He's wearing, I have to just paint the scene for you. He's wearing like a raggedy Harry Potter sweatshirt and these old loafer shoes. And he just walks in and he's like, Haley. And I'm like, yes, I'm Haley. And he's like, oh, good. I caught you. I think we need to monitor your HCGs, 'cause I don't know, you have a tilted uterus and I'm not sure that we could see, like maybe there was something and we couldn't see it. And so I think we need it. And he is talking like a mile a minute. I'm like in shock by what is happening. And the midwife is just staring at him, and come to find out he's the high risk OB of the practice. And I, as my story continue to have several engagements with this OB, because I always end up in the high risk department, but, he is a character, as anyone in Missoula will tell you. And so that was pretty shocking, but, I really didn't want to monitor my HCGs. I had a lot of like kind of trauma from that, from my ectopic pregnancy and how they just weren't dropping. And I don't know, I just didn't want to do it. And the midwife was like, yeah, she doesn't. I was like, I held the fetus in my hand. And he was like, oh, okay. Then you're probably okay. So it was just like a very odd ending to that. Just so many opportunities for improved patient care and bedside manner. But, you know, everyone just thought like miscarriages are common, no need to really be concerned. They told me that I could start trying, you know, whenever I wanted to. I could wait if I wanted to, I could try right away if I wanted to. And so my husband and I decided we wanted to wait, you know, at least until I got my next period and then maybe try again for the next cycle. So we did do that, and we actually got pregnant again, which I found out actually a little early. It was right before New Year's, and we were going to stay with some family, and I was like, well, if I'm not going to be drinking on New Year's, I want to make sure that there's like a reason why. And so I took the test like a few days before a missed period, and the line was faint, but I thought it was just because I took it early, you know? So I was of course nervous, but we were excited, kind of back at it again. And we go on this trip, and my cousin was there and his wife was pregnant. And so it was just kind of like lots of, I wasn't obviously telling people, but I felt like I wanted to be a part of this like pregnancy excitement. So a lot of just conflicting emotion. But I started lightly spotting and like very mild cramping. And I was trying to tell myself that same thing that everyone tells me, spotting and cramping can be very normal in early pregnancy. So I convinced myself that it was normal and fine. And we got home, and that next Monday I like called the office just to schedule my regular first ultrasound appointment. But it was a few like hours later that same day that I started bleeding more heavily. So I called back in again, and she's like, well, it's way too early to like look on ultrasound, but we can pull your beta HCG if you want to do that. So I went in and did that. And I mean, by the time you got the results, it was pretty clear that I was losing that pregnancy already. My HCG was at zero by that first draw. So it was just a very quick, early loss for that one. But hard that like a pattern was starting to form. And they, you know, started talking a little bit more about some things we could potentially do. You know, they started doing a few more labs. So, you know, we did like luteinizing hormone and estradiol and follicle stimulating hormone and, thyroid stimulating hormone, all those things. And they were all normal. The only thing that came up was that, my progesterone was a little low, right around 10. So not like super low, but not really ideal. So they said I could start supplementing with, progesterone if I wanted to, which was just hard. I think I was at this place of not trusting my care providers, which is a really tricky place to be in, because I felt like everything they said I wanted to question, and it just added so much more stress to me than like needed to be necessary. I remember even this simple like decision around whether or not I wanted to supplement with progesterone. I was like so worried that I was going to throw off my hormone cycles and that I didn't want to be adding anything else. And so it took me forever to decide that that actually was like what I should do. I found myself following Instagram doctors more than my real doctor, which like is not probably what you're supposed to do, but there's also a lot of good information out there. But anyway, so I started doing that, and then we just decided to keep trying. And we started trying like immediately. I don't think, because it was basically like a period, that loss was so early that we just kind of started right away. And then we entered about a 6-month period of not getting pregnant, which was just an interesting shift for us. For many people, that would probably feel very normal. But we went from getting pregnant so fast each time to then just not getting pregnant. So that added a whole new level, because before, like, I wasn't really thinking about it so much as like an infertility issue. It was just like the losses. But then, you know, it was like, well, what is this whole new thing? And so I just kind of dove in with like everything I could do. I started going to acupuncture. I had never been to acupuncture before. She recommended the book, It Starts With an Egg. I saw that was recommended on your website too, I think, which just like blew my mind. And I was like, that was one of the books that I was like, why didn't they tell me to read this at that preconception appointment? Because all this stuff takes so much time to start improving your egg quality and like other things, you know? And again, I felt like I was in this weird place where I wanted to try a lot of the things mentioned in the book. And some of them, of course, I could do by myself. You know, we purged our kitchen of plastics and like made a lot of changes to our shampoos and all that kind of stuff. But when it came to the supplements, I felt like nervous making those decisions by myself. And yet I also knew that this OB and the midwives, every time I tried to bring it up, they were like, well, I mean, you can take supplements if you want, but there's not a lot of research around it. You know, they're not regulated. Be careful. That was all I really got. So, I started taking a few things on my own. I think, you know, in addition to my prenatal and vitamin D, I started taking CoQ10, and I think I added like a vitamin E, but still didn't feel like I wanted to do much more than that without knowing more. And this whole time too, I was trying to connect with a naturopathic doctor here in Missoula, but she was not taking new patients and had a long waiting list. So it was kind of like holding out hope that I would one day be able to connect with her, which I soon did a little bit later. But one of the other things I tried massage and then the acupuncturist was like, you know, one of the things that really worked for me was craniosacral therapy, which I had never really heard much about or done before, but I was like, great. Yep. I literally was like, I will try everything. My husband thought I had kind of gone off the deep end. I mean, he was supportive of me, but I was like spending a lot of money. I was just like trying to do anything I could. I have to say the craniosacral therapy was probably not the best decision. Not saying in general, I think it's fine. I think I just went to, again, a provider that was maybe just not quite the right fit for me. It was my first time doing like any kind of energy work or anything. So, I mean, very different in general, just a new experience. But at one point he told me as I was like laying on the table and he was, you know, feeling my energy or whatnot, that I was pregnant and that he was certain I was going to carry this pregnancy to term, which, you know, of course I was not pregnant at that time. And I have had more losses since then. And I was just like, man, as a provider, never tell someone who's experienced pregnancy loss that they are pregnant. They're going to carry it to term. So that was unfortunate. I did not go back there. But I've kept up with some of the other things. But then this past June, I called back the naturopathic office and was able to get in for an appointment. And that has just like, just from a perspective of just like my stress level and feeling like supported by care providers, that's been a huge kind of turning point for me. She has like additional training in infertility support. And everything, you know, that I was reading, I'd come in with my list of questions and she would like ask me like, well, what about this? You know, like, have you done this lab? Oh, you've done like 70% of the labs, but you're missing some, you know, when I had been like in my OB's office, like fighting to get them to do more labs and they were like refusing and saying it wasn't necessary. And so it was just really nice to finally feel like I found someone that was like on the same page as me, that I didn't have to like fight with, that I like trusted her opinions. And so she, you know, had made a plan to do a very extensive lab workup. She, in addition to some of the ones that I was missing from before, like thyroid antibodies and homocysteine and whatnot, she was feeling like it was time to do the full kind of OB complications panel, which is a lot of the autoimmune like clotting disorders and things like that. So we had a plan for that. She also wanted me, I had kind of been concerned this whole time about like, I've never had the best digestion. I was a Peace Corps volunteer and kind of every, you know, since I've come back from that, like my gut has just not been super happy. And I bring this up to providers all the time and they're all like, yeah, I mean, you probably have IBS or something, but you know, not much you can do about it. Like I've never really had anyone take me seriously. And she was like, wait, what? You should have led with the fact that you were a Peace Corps volunteer. Like, you know, like there could be so much going on in your gut. We really need to focus on that. And so she really wanted me to do like a fast and then a kind of 2 weeks of the autoimmune protocol diet and slowly reintroducing foods and just kind of do like a gut reset. And then she also wanted me to do a sweat detox. And this was the plan. I was like, okay, this is going to be some like big lifestyle adjustments, but sure. Again, like I will do anything. we had already been trying that cycle before I saw her, and all of these things were things that, I couldn't do if I was pregnant. And so, you know, we decided like, wait until I get my next period. And then we would kind of follow through with this care plan, including a lot of the labs were day 3 labs. And so we had to wait until, after I got my next period. But it turns out I was pregnant that cycle. And I was very nervous because I, you know, felt like, well, I haven't done any of these things that we, you know, set out in our plan. But I was excited. I messaged her right away and she was like, let's get you in to do your HCGs and check your progesterone. So we did all that and everything was looking really good. Like everything was doubling. My progesterone levels looked really good. And so she was like, you know, I get that you're nervous, but like, you should feel okay about this. You know, like this is a good start. We were really busy at the time. We had like a lot of vacations planned. So it was kind of, you know, probably good. I was very active and just kind of keeping my mind off things. And again, the midwives and the OB wanted to see me early. They said like around 6 weeks, cause they just, again, with the history of ectopic, wanted to make sure that the, fetus was in my uterus. So I scheduled an appointment. It was at like 6.5 weeks. And the midwives prepped us, you know, like you may not hear a heartbeat. That can be really scary for people. But when it's this early on, you know, we would just have you come back like the next week if you don't hear a heartbeat. And so we were so prepped for that. We were like expecting to go in there and not hear a heartbeat, but we knew that was going to be okay. And so we go in for the appointment and the sonographer first tries like abdominal. And I was like, oh, I'm like, I went 6.5 weeks. Like she was like, okay, well I'll check this. But then yeah, we're probably going to have to do transvaginal. And so she sees it right away. It's in my uterus. And so I'm just like, check, like, that's all I'm in here for is confirming that it's in my uterus. And she's still like looking around. I'm like, not nervous at all. And she then looks at me and she's like, I'm so sorry, you guys, I don't hear a heartbeat. And we're like, oh no, it's okay. Like the midwives told us it was early, like we probably wouldn't hear it. And she was like, well, like for how it's measuring, like I really should hear a heartbeat. So that was just so confusing for us because it felt like we had been prepped that we probably wouldn't hear a heartbeat. And she's like, I'll go get the OB. So again, I was scheduled to see a midwife that day, but I get my favorite OB instead because I keep having these complications. So he comes back in, you know, he kneels down, he's right next to me. And he's like, I'm so sorry, you guys. And I'm like, I don't understand. Like it's measuring great. It's measuring at 6.5 weeks. Like, you know, isn't it just early? And he was like, well, no, we really should hear a heartbeat by now. He's like, I'll just say I'm very concerned. He's like, it's fine. I would love to be proven wrong, but I'm very concerned by this. And you know, he was like, we can come in back in on Monday and we can do another ultrasound. And, you know, if there's no heartbeat, then we can do a DNC. And I was just like, whoa, like, why are we even talking about this? Like, I was in total denial. Like, I really thought that it was a healthy pregnancy. I think my body felt so different this time than all my other pregnancies. I never in my earlier pregnancies, like wasn't really experiencing a lot of nausea or anything, which could be fine. Many people don't, but I also know that like nausea can actually be a sign of a really healthy pregnancy, that your hormones are doing what they're supposed to do. So I was like feeling more of that and, just felt so pregnant, you know, and I just couldn't believe that this was happening. And I kept saying that out loud to him. I just feel so pregnant. He's like, well, you are so pregnant, but it's just that there's not a heartbeat. And so I asked if we could do HCGs, over the next few days as we were waiting for the Monday follow-up appointment. So we did that. And the first draw, I'm not going to remember these numbers, but I mean, it was like high, it was good. It was like a very solid HCG level for where I was at. And you know, this is where it's like kind of complicated, where I have so many people on my care team, because the midwife sees that, not really knowing the conversation that I had with the OB, and was like, this level looks really good. Like, I feel really positive about this. And same with the naturopath, was like, that's a great first draw, you know, like we will see. And so it felt really positive. And so again, I was like so in denial. I was really thinking that he was wrong. I like looked up all these research studies, like showing, you know, like how long you need to wait before determining that it's non-viable. And a lot of them were saying like, you know, you have to wait at least until 7 weeks. And I was looking at the measurements of crown rump and the yolk sac. And I was like, oh, you know, I just kind of go down these rabbit holes sometimes, but what else can you do? Right. Like those 4 days that I was waiting were absolute hell. And so, Sunday we do the second draw. And it went up, but it didn't go up as much as they wanted to see it. They wanted it to go up like at least by a third, and it only went up, I don't know, less than that. I can't remember exactly, but you know, it still felt like it could be in the range. And my husband's like a software engineer, and he's like pulling up all these bell curves. He's like, I don't know, you're on the bell curve. I think it can still be okay. You know, we just like, we're not willing to give up hope. But later on that evening, I, did start kind of cramping a little bit. And so it was kind of the first time, because the rest of the time, like my body still felt so, so good, so pregnant, that it was like really hard to believe that that was happening. But when that started happening, I was like, oh, okay, maybe this is the direction that this is going. So I went in the next morning. It was so awful. I walk in, they take me back to the room, and it's an operating room that's like set up for a DNC. And we hadn't even done the ultrasound yet. And I was like, just burst into tears. And the sonographer walks in and she's like, oh my gosh, what is this? Do you want to leave this room? We should leave this room. And I was like, yeah. She's like, why did they put you here? So like, bless her heart, a little understanding, but just like these so many missed opportunities, right, that are really challenging. She takes me to another room, does the ultrasound again, you know, still no heartbeat. And I think at this point I was like, oh, it looks like fuzzier. It was like so crystal clear the other day. And she's like, yeah, it's kind of starting, to like separate from the wall already. And there was other indicators beyond even just the heartbeat that, things were not looking good. So I think, you know, that was enough for me then to like understand and believe that this is really what was happening. And I really wanted to do testing on, the fetus this time around so that we could check for chromosomal abnormalities. So because of that, and because, you know, I was at this point of like, my body is clearly not yet in miscarriage mode, but I know that this is the direction it's going. I was also ready for a DNC at that point. And it made it much easier for them to collect this sample to do the testing. So I actually did decide to go back into that operating room that they had set up, even though at the time I was like, there's no way I'm going to be ready for this. They gave me the option to go to the hospital instead. And, I think after hearing just like how much longer that process would be, I just wanted it to be over quickly. I knew that I had, you know, had a similar procedure before, and that I could do it. And, so we did that. It was over very quickly. And I mean, I just felt so broken. I was so, this one was hard. It was, all of them were very hard, but I think because this time I was feeling so good, because it had taken 6 months for us to get pregnant again, I just was like really hopeful for this one. And I think after three, it was really hard to like hold hope for being able to carry any pregnancy to term. I think, yeah, I'm in a different place now, but I think right after, I mean, I was like spiraling. I was like, oh my God, do we need to look into surrogacy? But I don't know. I don't know about surrogacy. There's so many like, you know, problems that come up with that. And I don't want to like take advantage of somebody who needs the money so much. You know, I was just like totally spiraling, you know, adoption. I like had like similar, you know, ethical qualms and stuff. I didn't know how I felt about it. I had a friend who was visiting that I like really should have told her not to come, not because she's not, she's an incredibly supportive friend, But I think just in that moment, it was so hard to be near anybody. And I felt guilty having her here. And that even though she was like so understanding and just wanted to take care of me, I still felt like she's visiting me in Montana. We're supposed to go camping. Like we should still have fun. And so we actually still did go camping because I just wanted a distraction, but they told me I couldn't swim in the water. I couldn't go on hikes, which are like things that are very therapeutic for me. So instead I was like sitting at the shore of this like gorgeous alpine lake, just like sobbing, but like feeling bad about crying, like not that I should have, but that's just how I felt. So I just had my sunglasses on and I was just like sobbing this lake. It was, I was in a really low place. But I came back from that and reconnected with the naturopath. And in the meantime, I'm getting all these texts from the genetic testing company that's doing the testing on the fetus saying like, you owe $500 for this test. You owe $1,000 for this test. And I was just like, I sent them the most upset email being like, I'm going through a pregnancy loss. I do not need these text messages about how much money I owe you. So it was really bad, but we eventually figured it out and got my insurance to cover that. We got the results a few weeks later. There were no chromosomal abnormalities, which again is like good. It's interesting. Many miscarriages are from chromosomal abnormalities. So that kind of like ruled out a big one. I went back into the naturopath and we kind of took a look at my labs. And of course, everyone really wanted to do all the clotting factors and whatnot. And I was thinking like, those are rare, right? You know, I was like really not thinking that that would be something that, you know, we would find for me. And she was like, well, you know, for someone in your situation where we've ruled out chromosomal abnormalities, we've ruled out anything anatomical. I had done a sonohysterogram to look at my uterus, like everything had looked good. I don't have any like hormonal imbalances, like everything's just looking so normal. She said, you know, it's actually a higher probability that you would have this than obviously the general population. So I was like, oh, that's interesting. So again, I leave the appointment with this lab order and I like start diving into the research and I'm finding like all of these studies showing that for, you know, people right in my situation that were referred into the study who they have ruled out all these other things, it was actually incredibly high. Like 92% of people, they ended up finding some form of blood clotting disorder and only 8% they didn't find anything. This was like repeated in multiple studies. So I was like, oh my gosh, they're definitely, this is it. I have a blood clotting disorder. And I was like, at least, you know, when they find that out, they can treat it when you're pregnant. And most everyone goes on to have a healthy pregnancy. There was like 2 people that didn't. So I was feeling so optimistic that I like was going to have a clotting disorder. And of course we find out that I do not have a blood clotting disorder, which, you know, is good news. Everyone's like, yay, good news. Everything's normal. And I'm like, right. But like, now we're just really not finding much. So, I'm feeling like, I don't know, that maybe I'm entering like the end of the investigations that can happen. We have a few more things left. I have done the gut reset, long journey with the autoimmune protocol diet, which, is very hard. It was my first time doing any diet. This is probably the most restrictive one out there. And it was wild. Had a lot of motivation to stick with it, but, it was like so overwhelming to be doing that on top of this loss and the grief. And then I was like doing a sweat detox. So I was going to the sauna every day to sit in the sauna for an hour. And it was just like, what is happening in my life? And kind of the last labs that my naturopath is recommending are some more genetic tests to check for like the MTHFR mutation and a few other things. She said the easiest way to do this actually is to do one of the ancestry.com tests. It's the cheapest way. So you can do one of those and then you request the raw data file. And then there's another website that you can upload that data into that like interprets it all. And then I can share it with her and she'll look for the relevant genes. So we have done our ancestry.com tests and we are just waiting for the results. And I think in addition to that mutation, there's like several others that sometimes pop up that prevent like your ability to absorb choline and like some other essential nutrients. So she has said that she has found things for other patients in her practice that has helped them with their pregnancies, but I don't know. So really, I mean, that is where I am at. I have started taking baby aspirin every day. The OB says that even though I don't have a clotting disorder, he might consider putting me on heparin after, a positive pregnancy test, I guess, just like inflammation in general, you know, can lead to loss. And, you know, both doctors have shared that, you know, whether or not you have a blood clotting disorder, that like blood clotting tends to be a factor in loss. So, I mean, my story ends really there. That is where I'm at right now. We're back at trying to get pregnant. I think I've come to a place of feeling a little more grounded and I do have some hope back. I'm not like totally ready to throw in the towel, but it is pretty wild to think about like how many times I can go through this, you know, like what do I have the strength for? Like, you know, when do I say enough is enough? So I don't know, we're not there yet, but it's looming and that feels hard. But I will say that, you know, this balance of like finally finding, even though it's still pretty wacky, but like a care team, like, I think the naturopath has really made that gel. I think I felt like I could trust her when I asked her, is this really the best OB for me to be seeing in this situation? And she was like, yes, he's brilliant. He's wacky, but he is brilliant. And he's the best one here in Montana. You know, I think like it's hard. I still wonder what my care would be like if I was still living in San Francisco or back in Seattle or other places that I've lived. That's like a new thing I'm experiencing here of having such limited access. I don't think we're going to go the route of connecting with a fertility clinic. It's not really quite the right fit for us. I think if we had chromosomal abnormalities, yes, maybe IVF would make sense so they could do some screening on the embryos, but that's at least wasn't the case with the last pregnancy. And the fact that we're getting pregnant and just not keeping it would, you know, I don't know that IUIs or other things would be that helpful, but even if we had wanted to, there's not one in Missoula. So that's like a whole nother stressor. I mean, thinking about if that's something we wanted to do, we'd have to start with telehealth and would probably travel to Seattle if we ever did work with a fertility clinic. So,
small.
Sorry not
problems.
To end on like a hopeful. My story doesn't end on too much of a high, but that is my story.
Well, your story, you know, a lot of people will come to me and they ask, "Do I have to have a success story to share?" And I say, "No, people." Often need not a story that ends with a result just yet. You know, like if somebody is in their wait and listening to this, knowing that they're not alone is what they're going to get from this conversation. And I think a story is so important to share before you even reach the end. So I appreciate the vulnerability to share before you get to the end of this journey. You know, I think we all have those feelings of how much more of this can we take. Mm-hmm. And I know I hit that point after miscarriage number two, and yeah. I was pretty certain if I had another one, I would not do this anymore. So I think that having a feeling like that is totally valid. It's also valid to have that feeling and then to change your mind the next day and be like, no, yeah. I can go through this. This is fine. Like we just need to get to, you know, we need to get further. And there's no right way. There's no, like, you don't have to make a definite decision. You can change your mind along the way. And sounds like you like your team is, I like the term wacky. That's a very interesting term, but I have been there. I have had a wacky team and it works whenever you have all the moving parts. And so you're on the right track. Yeah. It sucks to have to do all this work.
Yeah. Yeah. I will say that finding your website and learning more about just the support that you're offering people has really inspired me to like think about some support that I could maybe build here in Missoula. Missoula doesn't have any kind of peer support group. They don't have they have a lot of doulas, not a lot of pregnancy loss doulas. And, you know, as I've pondered several times if I wanted to be a doula, but was wondering like, oh, I don't know, that doesn't feel quite right. I haven't even had my own child. Like, not saying you can definitely be a doula when you haven't had your own children. But for me, I don't know, I wasn't feeling about it. But my doula had mentioned like, well, had you ever considered being a pregnancy loss doula? And so it's something I'm thinking about, or even thinking about trying to start up a peer support group. So it's been really inspiring seeing the work that you're doing too.
Yeah. Well, and, keep your eye out, because I do have, I've created a program for becoming a miscarriage doula, that will be coming out in October.
Yeah. I saw that. I can't wait to hear more.
Yeah. So it's, tough work, but it needs to be done, and it needs to be local for people. You know, it's, mm-hmm. I think about the difference in my own care if I had access to, mm-hmm. to honestly, to a lot of medical care, because I also live in a very small town area. I had to travel 45 minutes to my OBGYN and an hour and 15 minutes to my fertility specialist. So I feel the pain of like limited options and limited support and having to travel for it.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's another layer.
It's another layer, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, Haley, thank you so much for sharing. Again, I appreciate it. And please come back and share an update. No matter what your update is, we would love to hear from you.